Accession number 30134, reel 4.
So that's Joe Setri, and this is reel 4. You're just talking about cohesion, Joe.
Yes, well, anyway, throughout, and this is in the second part, Normandy 2, we had this remarkable cohesion in the battalion of people knowing where each other was and keeping together. I don't necessarily bunched up, but I mean, you know, as a unit. Anyway, we got, again, fairly good order. I mean, we were not, you know, brigade and so on, but some units completely disintegrated, but we didn't. And we moved off. We weren't directed on Bray Dunes to wade up to the sea and wait to be plucked off. We were sent down the Mole to be picked off by the Shikari, the destroyer moored. And we moved there in strict order of companies with every man, an officer carrying a rifle or like machine gun and a complement of ammunition, which weren't hard to find, that's lying around the place. Those were the orders. Otherwise, you don't embark. You bring an arm and weapons,
yes,
and ammunition. We don't embark. Only to be told when we got to the boat, throw those things into the sea by the sailors. We've come to save the bodies. There is no room for kit, equipment, ammunition, and so on. So in they went.
Can you just describe the scene there, Joe, before you go onto the boat? Because the scene that you see there must be amazing, surely.
Well, the scene in Dunkirk. Well,
on the beaches.
The beaches, of course, we didn't, being on the Mole, we didn't have a direct view of the beaches.
Okay.
So, although one company, I mean, the rifle companies went on Shikari, but headquarter company with Major Stewart made their own way. As I say, it's not possible to have a sort of complete cohesion you have on a parade ground.
Right.
Made its way separately with headquarter company people via but near the Mole, and you got on something else. Mm. However, but all the rifle companies, in strict order, went on the Shikari, as they were told, dump our arms. Well, the scene, the Mole was shelled periodically by long-range German artillery from their own perimeter. There was a great gap in the middle, and obviously being blown, and we had to go gingerly on planks to cover it. It was night, so one couldn't see a lot. You know, it's not as if you could have a panorama view. All around were fires, either small, you know, and always smell of burning and all the rest. But we couldn't really see. Obviously, the town was wrecked. I mean, wherever you looked, you know, there was rubble. But we didn't really have a good view of, you know, a bird's eye view, because we assembled all movement, of course, again, with the Luftwaffe as it was in those days, and with the freedom of the skies, that most of our aircraft kept for the Battle of Britain.
Yes.
All movement was done at night pretty well. Mm. So you had a very limited vision. It looked like a ghost place, but there was order. And you had, I mean, right to the last, we were next to Guards Brigade, and they maintained their discipline, as we did. But, I mean, there were provost, you know, military policemen directing people. Oh, yes, it was not, you know, just a shambolic thing.
It does
in,
sound
in
very
Dunes, it must have been. But not on the Mole.
Right.
And the order, I mean, the brigade kept its order, and the guards kept their order, and so on. And it was a disciplined show.
Yes.
Also, of course, we had a lot of French as well embarking. They didn't bark on the Shikari. The way it was done, we had an assembly point, and probably the head of the Mole, and then we formed up in a certain order and went.
You didn't have to wade out, Joe.
We didn't. We got the destroyer was moored alongside.
Moored alongside.
Yes.
Yeah.
We went onto it. As I say, they wouldn't take the arms.
Right.
So we were spared that. So anyhow, we got there, and the crossing was uneventful. I think sometime I heard both was firing in the middle of the night. We were actually crammed like this.
Sardine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. During the voyage, somebody managed to pass, passed a mug of cocoa or something. But we were like that.
Yes.
It was a question of getting the bodies. Mm. So obviously no room for arms or anything like
right.
that.
Right. And you went back at night?
Yes. Oh yes, this was night. All work was done by, at dawn, all these things left.
Yeah.
You know, the boy, the Luftwaffe.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah,
yeah. All the, yes,
yes,
I
yes,
see.
Yes. So, yes. One was, you know, if you were waiting, queuing up or something like that, come about 3 o'clock, you had it, and go back.
Too late until the next
yeah,
day.
That's right. So, all this was done by night, and as I say, you only get the impression in your immediate sense of what's happening. I do remember the military police, and smartly it turned out, too. No sort of scruffy unit, sort of directing people, so on, and very businesslike, and apparently unperturbed with what was happening around them.
Yeah.
A great example. Mm. However, we got on, and ended up at Dover, where we were put into tented camps, and there we slept. Because it was very hastily organised, the whole thing was hastily organised. Once we decided to withdraw, there were palliasses on the grass inside tent camps, and we just flopped down there in what we stood up in and slept 48 hours. Occasionally, woken up for a meal, which consisted, of course, of all they could get ready at the time was soup. And doorstep sandwiches of cheese and onions, or cheese and bouillon, that sort of thing. And until we moved to our reassembly area in Yorkshire, in the stable, in the steeple.
Yes. Just a point here, Joe, because I know you're not going to mention it yourself, but you were awarded a medal at this for Dunkirk, weren't you?
Yes, Military Cross.
Military Cross, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there it was, but that really closes the part, the operational part, because we're now back in UK.
Okay, do you want to take a pause there, Joe?
Sorry?
Do you want to take a pause there, or do you want to continue from here?
Well, I think we could probably carry on. Don't
fine,
you?
Okay.
But at least we'll do
good.
Half of what.
That's fine.
We might
That's
even
wonderful.
Be able to finish, because the rest really... is what we did. Oh, yeah, one thing I must... Yes, we must finish this. Mm. What I want to do is the salient points. The salient points, which brought us through that, was that we were a tough, well-trained, and well-led battalion. And that, of course, is due from the top. Colonel Ben Pendlebury, who was a young officer, in the First World War, wounded and decorated with a Military Cross. And he was a wonderful man and a wonderful trainer. And he's one of those people who inspire confidence. And in some of the critical situations where we still had the line going, when there was something really nasty going on, to hear his calm voice the other end of the line was very reassuring. He's a wonderful man, but he also is a very blunt, outspoken man, and probably didn't get very much further with being brigadier, but not a very exciting command, because didn't hesitate to say what he thought.
Yes, yes.
But he was that type, and he was excellent. He also had very many innovations for speeding up orders and that sort of thing, which he introduced in his training, which helped an awful lot.
He later, Joe, just as a point on this, he later had somebody else join the battalion and fought with the battalion later on in the war, I believe. Pendlebury.
Nothing a major burden.
No, there was another Pendlebury that was killed.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Killed
that was
in Germany, yes.
Yes, that was after my time.
Yes.
Yes, on the River Aller.
That's right.
That's right, yes. Yes, that was young Pendlebury, his son. One of his sons had to, I think. But we owe that, you see, well, it all starts at the top, and there it was. And Now, top of this, of course, we were marching something like 20, 25 miles in the night, digging during the day, possibly a brush with the enemy, and then having to up sticks again, do the same thing, and doing that the whole time. Mm-hmm. While, when it was, in fact, what coined the phrase, dig, wire, and retire.
Dig, wire, and retire.
That was Dunkirk. Once the things got really, really going. Mm. But no time did discipline break down, or morale remained remarkably high. And I will remember in that position, that last position, nobody had the slightest thought of going back. We were holding well. We could see with our eyes, I mean, the results of our shooting.
Yes.
And give us enough ammunition, we stay here indefinitely. That was a feeling.
I suppose the problem would be, though, Joe, that they may creep round behind you.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, they're again. I mean, they had the same problem on their side that we had on our side, flooded country.
Yeah.
I mean, it was... they really, what they wanted to do, obviously, was to get hold of that strong point, that key point, shall I say, put the bridge in order, and then up the road.
Yes.
Now, that country was deliberately flooded.
Yes.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
And our movement, I mean... Well, I didn't have any ducks anyway, you know, D-U-K-W.
Yes, when you say the country was flooded there deliberately, Joe, you mean as a defensive
precaution? Yes.
So it was flooded by us by the French and somebody?
No, well, I don't know who flooded the thing. But anyhow, there it was. So we had, we were very tough, as I say, we were tough army before the war. No one thought of pulling back. And their behaviour was so remarkably good. Now, at one point I was firing from a loophole, one of these things. And on my left was Corporal Bagnall, and see him now today, small man, dark man, possibly a minor in civil life. And suddenly he lurched back, wounded. I think it was a leg wound, so it must have been some armour-piercing thing, and he was obviously in very great pain. He was sweating.
Mm.
Never cried out.
Really?
No. But I mean, that was the way they were. Never heard anybody shouting or anything like that. No. We got him away. Carrier. 3-tonner. I don't quite know what happened. I think he survived. But of course, that hospital was taken over by the Germans, who again, I'm told, behaved very quickly. The frontline troops, you know, not usually, but they could be very, very correct.
Yes.
And of course, possibly admired an opponent who. But the SS, you could. Not do anything.
Yes, right.
So, anyhow, that was that. Now, the thing is that again, we marched back. We were ordered, okay, go back. This is all right. Talking about morale. It's in the right context. That when we were marching back along the road to go to Dunkirk, that's before we got into the cellars, Pendlebury was at the checkpoint to see companies through at the railway crossing which led into Dunkirk proper, that is Rosmalen or Rosdalen.
Just looking at your map now, Joe, I'm sure, to find this place.
Yes. Up here.
Got it?
Yep. Yes, right up there.
Oh, right.
Where, fact, they established the hospital. But anyway, he was at the checkpoint.
Almost on the coast.
Rosenthal. Yep. And, Marcus, with his ragged little band, unwashed, unshaved, stinking, marched past the CO, and Marcus gave the order to march to attention. They did it as if they were on parade.
Really?
But that indicates the morale.
Yes, it does.
Well, I think they were rather proud of themselves having done what they did.
Yes.
And anyway, they weren't downhearted.
Right.
By no means. But that's a case in point. And of course, Marcus is a very generous man, always. And he always said, of course, my VC belongs as much to the men who were with me as to me. And so. And that has a certain amount of truth in it, because without their support and their cooperation on that critical, that wouldn't have been achieved.
Mm. Mm.
But on the other hand, he was the inspiration.
Yes, of course.
Goes two ways.
Because you did then in the earlier conversation there, Joe, you mentioned the fact that he was back in HQ and went forward to the Forward company.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Forward.
Yes, went forward to the barn area.
Well, that's leadership.
Yes.
In the same way, in a different context, in the Battle of the Falklands.
Mm.
What Marcus did really was to take on a section commander, being a section commander.
Yes.
The Falklands War, when two para got stuck, when the Argentinians were well organised and fighting quite hard, got stuck. Colonel Jones went forward and unstuck his front line, taking the role of a section commander.
Yes.
But he was killed in doing it.
That's right.
Marcus survives.
Yes, absolutely.
But that's where a leader, the right time.
Mm.
In the right place.
Mm.
Use the effect.
Leadership, Joe, I suppose, isn't it?
That's right. So that's a parallel thing, one in defence, the other in attack.
Mm.
Yes, well, there it was. So we had this this cohesion, and this, so I say, confidence between men, NCOs, and each did their job. And
How did you feel, Joe? Now you've now experienced.
Well,
this,
I'll tell you exactly what my. Now these were very fleeting thoughts, because there was a lot to get on with, and I was going around, like, you know, seeing things and doing things and so on, trying to coordinate fire. Well, anyway, doing my job. Fleeting thoughts. This is soldiering. That's what the army's all about. I mean, I wanted to be a soldier, not to be able to wear a uniform, attract the girls or anything. I was serious, professional. That's what it's all about. Fleetingly, in my mind again, I'm always fond of military history. I had the idea of Corona, right? You were driven out of Spain. But that wasn't the end. We would come back again. We were driven out. This is another Corona. We always start our wars badly. And also, the third thought was, thinking of our vast resources, the great empire we had in those days, with all its resources, there can only be one end to this conflict, no question about it. Right. This is just a bad start. And that was my feeling.
Right. So, yes, it was one of confidence and knowing that things would turn around in the end.
Well, we've just got to stick it through.
Yes.
Yeah. So, those are my thoughts. Now, post-Dunkirk, I think we can keep an eye on. No, I think we'll stop there.
We'll pause it there. Okay.
Yes, because.
Okay, Joe, thank you for the lunch. That was lovely.
That's all right.
Feel very full now. We're now talking about.
We're both very full, yes.
And now we're talking about post-Dunkirk.
That's right. Well, after our initial reception at Dover, and initial first sleep prolonged, we were put on rail and sent north to Yorkshire, where we reformed, or at least resorted ourselves out, because we always remained as a cohesive whole. And the headquarters of the battalion was a village called Ainderby Steeple, not very far from Northallerton. In fact, Northallerton was really our resettlement area, shall we call it, and companies billeted in various little villages around about. It's quite true to say that in the first few days, all ranks felt thoroughly exhausted. The last few weeks, the last week or so in France particularly, almost without sleep. Hard fighting, long marching, digging, and little to eat or drink. And it was not uncommon this I can contest, for men to fall asleep on their feet and only come to when they fell down. There were not, these early days, there were not even enough rifles to go round. Remember, we had to dump our arms.
Yes.
Our role then, as we were, was anti-parachute because of the threat of German parachutes. And we, our mobility consisted of single-decker Green Line buses.
Yes, because just to add a little bit there, Joe, because the fear then, I guess, was that after Dunkirk, the fear was that the Germans might just turn around and follow you over.
Yes, I'll come to that in time. That is so. Thousands of Tommy guns were imported from the U.S. Al Capone type, because we had none. We had no weapons of that sort at all. No submachine gun. Germans had. We didn't. And those, that really was our armament when we went round in these buses. The other things that we did at that time, while we were still waiting to be re-equipped and re-armed and reformed, was to help the LDV, Local Defence Volunteers.
Yes.
Later to become the Home Guard. We could advise them on how to set up roadblocks and teach them to shoot and one thing or another and give all the help we possibly could. We had no army vehicles. All the vehicles we had at that stage were impressed vehicles, civilian vehicles. I was given the company to command very shortly after Dunkirk. I was promoted to acting captain, given the company to command, and my company, personal company vehicle for reconnaissance doing anything was an old-fashioned Buick.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the kind of vehicles that we had. Of course, the priority for any weapons that came off the assembly lines then, was the Middle East, where Wavell, of course, won a brilliant victory over the Italians many times size of his own force in December 1940, which was the one gleam of light in a very gloomy period in our history. And of course, later on, we were to confront the Germans there, so that was a priority for weapons and equipment, and we were second, we took second place. Even in 1941, by the time the 42 Div was reorganized and we were getting back into some sort of large-scale exercises, I remember the divisional artillery still being drawn by commercial vehicles at that stage. That's the way we were. And this time, for the first time, we got wireless sets, an 18 set to communicate from company to battalion. That was the first appearance of wireless. Our primary role at that time was the defense of the UK. As we all know, historically, the Germans had prepared for the invasion of England to follow up. We had, at the most, two fully equipped divisions in the UK, territorial ones, at the most. And that was it. And I think possibly, had the Battle of Britain gone the other way, they might well have invaded.
Was there much sign, you say, mentioned the Battle of Britain there, Joe, was there much sign, or did you see much sign of air activity?
Not where we were. I think most of the air battles were in the south of England.
Mm-hmm.
But one stage, we were billeted, B Company anyway, in a place called Leeming Bar, which had an airfield, as then, completely unprotected. It was not very much more than a last grass area like Leavesden, from which the bombers that went over to Germany in rather small numbers, but still they went over, Halifaxes, Lancasters and so on, of the old type, I took off from. And that place, I gather, was very badly bombed, not while we were there.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the air activity really was in the south of England, the Battle of Britain.
Yes.
And it's quite possible, of course, it was a very narrow victory, but it was a victory. Because it was a very hard-fought thing. Had that gone the other way, we might well have been invaded. Because in spite of the Royal Navy and the water channel, with the factor of air power entering into the thing, it's not all that, the thing is not all that loaded in the favour of the warship.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the example of this later on in 1942, when our prime warships, battleships, the Prince of Wales and the Renowned, were sunk by the Japanese, of course, in the Pacific, because they had no air cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Battle of Britain gone the other way might well have been invaded, but we were committed to anti-invasion, and the code word was Cromwell. And at one time, Cromwell was issued, but it happened to be a bogus alarm. But that was a situation where, when all said and done, when later on 1941, when all said and done, the Germans captured Crete solely by air,
yes,
with enormous losses, of course.
Yes, and you just said that your role was in a defensive role or planning, training defensive role against air parachuters.
Yes.
Yes.
So anyway, that was a danger of a really great. Tension, shall we say. We didn't really feel it, but it was there, and that was our role.
Mm.
And everybody, of course, was, as I say, full of the war spirit, and they were, I don't think they quite really knew. In fact, we didn't really realize until we got back quite close we were to, I mean, when we went up country from Dover and so on, to see sandbag positions on the road, roadblocks manned. I mean, we'd never seen that before. We went to France in 1940 or 39.
No, that's right.
That was something quite novel and something rather, should I say, frightening to see that, you know, these precautions had to be taken.
Mm.
Of course, things stiffened up as time went on and we got more weapons and more vehicles and so on. But at that time, I think it was pretty crucial. And of course, we know that the Germans had intended that, and that was Operation Sea Lion. And I think the fact that the Battle of Britain turned against them was a deciding factor. Also, of course, Hitler then had plans on Russia.
Yes.
That was 1941.
Mm.
It was June the 21st, I think, he invaded Russia.
Mm.
Mm. Now, it's tedious and quite unnecessary to go through our many moves in the UK during that period. Suffice to say that our main training areas were Yorkshire, the moors, and Mere, Wincanton in the West Country, from 1943 to 44, in 42 to 44, which was good tank country, and where the armour was training, and where we had a lot of exercises in cooperation with armour.
There was, if I can just interject here a little, Joe, there was an instance, I think, that happened in Yorkshire on a river when...
Oh, yeah, well, I'm coming to that. Okay.
Yes.
I'm coming to that. I'm coming to all that.
Okay.
But, and then eventually we moved down to Bredgar for about the best part of a year, close to Sittingbourne in Kent. And from there to our marshalling area before we went to France in Normandy. Now, that was our general moves. But a few salient facts that occurred during this time, apart from our reorganization and gradual re-equipping. 42 Infantry Division became 42nd Armored Division, commanded by General Dempsey, consisting of two armored brigades and one support group consisting of the divisional artillery and one lorried infantry battalion, of which we form part. And we form part, this lorried infantry battalion, first these sanctuaries, and first oxen, bucks, and first HLI. And the idea of that was that in the course of an armoured battle, if a concerted infantry attack had to be made, we were it. So it came under General Dempsey's command, and came very much to General Dempsey's notice, to the effect that later on, in Normandy and other places, he took a particular interest in the battalion and came to visit us on at least two occasions in the battles that started with Normandy. And there was a link between him. I mean, he took a fancy to us. He was impressed by us. Mm-hmm. And that was that. Now, the other factor was General, well, at that time, Colonel Essame, E-S-S-A-M-E, Northampton by origin, but who took to us completely, became commanding officer, later General Essame. And he was a dynamic character who galvanized the battalion. And under his guidance and